Welcome to the deep dive.
Ever felt that frustration when a crucial local meeting couldn't happen because of maybe a snowstorm, or wished a council member could genuinely participate when they're stuck out of town? Today, we're diving into the silent battle over how local government meets here in Illinois. It's kind of a battle between tradition, transparency, and, well, the urgent need for flexibility.
Absolutely.
We're taking a stack of actual bill texts, current Illinois statutes, and some sharp analysis to give you the clearest picture possible.
Yeah, try to make sense of it all.
Right. Our mission, to uncover what the law actually allows today, what significant changes are on the table, and what that could mean for public bodies and, you know, you, the engaged citizen.
Exactly.
Get ready to cut through the legal jargon and get straight to those aha moments that make sense of it all.
It's a truly timely deep dive, and the stakes are, well, they're pretty high.
Yeah.
The way public bodies meet has seen significant shifts, especially with how technology has become, you know, just part of our lives.
For sure.
Understanding these nuances isn't just about compliance. It's crucial for both transparent governance and ensuring public participation stays vibrant.
Right.
We'll break down the specific legal pathways for remote participation, highlight the proposed shifts, and examine the practical implications that will directly affect your community.
Okay, let's unpack this then. Before we look at what might change, what does the Illinois Open Meetings Act, we'll call it OMA for short, allow right now when it comes to remote attendance? Because it's not just a free-for-all, is it?
No, definitely not.
It's all about Section 7, which lays out two distinct pathways.
Precisely. As of today, August 29, 2025, the OMA clearly outlines two primary scenarios for members to participate remotely. It's not a simple can or cannot. It's a very conditional how.
So let's start with the most common scenario. When just a single member, maybe due to an unexpected event, needs to participate remotely, that's pathway one, right? Section 7A. What are the exact conditions for that one person to call in?
You've hit on the core distinction immediately. Under current law, for an individual member to attend a meeting by audio or video conference, a physical quorum of the public body's members must still be physically present.
Physically present.
Yes, that's a foundational point. Think of it this way. The law really sees the public meeting as a physical gathering, like a town hall.
Okay.
You can't really have a town hall if the majority of the leadership isn't actually at the town hall, right?
Makes sense.
So even if one person calls in, the heart of the meeting, that quorum, still needs to be physically present to kind of anchor that public space.
Wow, so let me get this straight. Even if one member is genuinely sick, under the current law, you still need the majority of the board to actually be there in person.
Yes.
That feels like a very strong commitment to physical presence, almost surprisingly so in our remote first world.
It really is.
Yeah.
A very strong commitment. And the reasons allowed are equally strict. A majority of the physically present members can allow another member to attend remotely if that member is prevented from attending due to specific circumstances.
Okay, what are those?
There are only four listed. Personal illness or disability, employment purposes, or the business of the public body, a family or other emergency, or unexpected childcare obligations. The aha moment here is that these aren't loopholes for convenience. They're a limited safety valve designed for genuine, often urgent situations.
So no calling in from your Hawaiian vacation just because you're, quote, conducting public body business, unless that business is literally on the beach, right? Seems pretty clear.
Exactly. I mean, I remember advising a public body once that was trying to stretch the definition of family emergency to cover, like, a distant relative's birthday party.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, obviously that wouldn't fly under OMA's current tight definition.
Right.
Beyond just the reasons, the remote member should notify the recording secretary or clerk beforehand if it's practical. And crucially, the public body must have adopted its own rules governing this type of remote attendance.
Ah, okay. Local rules, too.
Yes, and those rules must conform to the OMA. This ensures local bodies are prepared and clear on their internal processes before someone even tries to call in.
So that covers the individual sort of one-off remote attendance where a physical quorum is still the backbone. But what about those extraordinary times, like, you know, during a pandemic when it's simply impossible for anyone to meet in person?
Right.
The Open Meetings Act has a completely different, much more stringent pathway for those truly exceptional circumstances, doesn't it?
Precisely. This is pathway two, found in Section 7E, and it's a completely distinct animal designed for very specific, very narrow circumstances.
Okay.
This provision allows an open or closed meeting to be conducted entirely by audio or video conference, without the physical presence of a quorum of the members. That's the big difference from the first pathway.
That sounds like a radical departure from the in-person default. What sort of extraordinary circumstances are we talking about here? It can't just be, like, any bad weather day, can it?
No, not at all. This pathway is only permissible under really strict conditions. First, the governor or the director of the Illinois Department of Public Health must have issued an official disaster declaration.
Okay, official declaration.
Yes, related to public health concerns. And it has to cover the public body's jurisdiction. And second, the head of the public body must determine that an in-person meeting is just not practical or prudent because of that declared disaster.
I see.
The core insight here is that this isn't about convenience. It's about essential government functions continuing when public health or safety makes physical gathering genuinely unsafe.
So when a disaster hits and a public body has to go fully remote, the law demands a whole suite of special protections to maintain transparency. What do those look like? What's that transparency supercharge you mentioned?
Quite comprehensive.
Yeah.
The law essentially throws the kitchen sink at ensuring public access.
Right.
For instance, all participating members must be verified, and they have to be able to hear one another. For open meetings, the public must be able to hear all discussion and votes.
How?
Either by being at the regular meeting location, or, if that's truly impossible due to the disaster, through alternative arrangements, like a telephone number, or maybe a web-based link.
Okay.
And at least one official could be a member. Chief legal counsel, chief administrative officer, must still be physically present at the regular meeting location, unless that's also unfeasible due to the disaster itself.
Wow. Even then, someone tries to be there.
Yeah, they really emphasize maintaining some physical anchor if possible. Also, all votes must be conducted by roll call, so there's no ambiguity.
Okay.
Generally, 48 hours notice is required, though there's an exception for genuine emergencies. And crucially, public bodies holding open meetings under this subsection must keep a complete audio or video recording, in addition to minutes.
A verbatim record.
Exactly. That verbatim record isn't always required for regular meetings, making it a key transparency feature here. Finally, the public body bears all the costs associated with complying with these heightened requirements.
That is a lot of safeguards. It makes sense, though, given the sort of unprecedented nature of completely remote meetings. It really underscores that even in a crisis, the spirit of open government needs to be upheld.
Precisely. This subsection emerged from specific challenges, aiming to balance critical public access with operational necessity during truly extraordinary circumstances. It's a temporary measure for declared emergencies, not a permanent shift.
Sure.
It ensures that even when people can't gather, their government remains accountable and accessible. The aha here is recognizing that while technology allows us to meet remotely, the legal framework still heavily favors in-person interaction, only making full exceptions under very controlled high-stakes conditions.
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting, because now we pivot to the future. We've covered the current landscape, the strict rules, but there's a proposed change that could significantly impact that first pathway, the individual remote attendance one. Tell us about Illinois House Bill 2886.
Right, HB 2886. It was introduced back on February 5, 2025, and it proposes to amend Section 7A of the Open Meetings Act. Remember those four specific reasons an individual member can attend remotely?
Yeah, illness, emergency, childcare, work.
Exactly. This bill targets those. The proposed change would add a kind of catch-all reason to the existing list. The language is, any other reason designated in rules adopted by the public body in accordance with subsection C below.
Whoa, so this is potentially huge for local bodies. Instead of being stuck with just those four narrow reasons, they could define their own additional circumstances.
That's the idea.
What's the practical impact if this bill were to actually become law?
Well, if enacted, boards that want more flexibility could legitimize additional reasons for remote attendance in their own adopted rules without needing, you know, a state-level disaster declaration.
Like what? What kind of reasons?
You could imagine scenarios like severe weather hazards, making travel unsafe, maybe broader caregiving responsibilities beyond just childcare, or even accommodating religious observances that might clash with meeting times.
Mm.
The true insight of HB 2886 is that it aims to sort of decentralize control, giving local bodies the power to define their own additional reasons for remote attendance.
Okay.
This could be a game changer for adaptability, but it also means you, the citizen, would need to pay closer attention to your local body's specific rules, not just the state law itself.
That's kind of a double-edged sword then. More flexibility for local government maybe, but potentially more homework for the citizen to keep up.
Could be, yeah.
But let's be really clear here. This still requires a physical quorum to be present, right? It doesn't allow everyone to just stay home and meet remotely.
Precisely. That's a critical distinction. This proposed change still requires a physical quorum to be present for the meeting itself.
Okay.
It doesn't enable fully remote meetings like the disaster provisions do. It's about broadening the why for individual members, but only when the majority is still physically gathered. So it's increased local discretion, but within the existing framework of that in-person default.
So what's the status of HB 2086 as of today, August 29, 2025? Is this flexibility already in play? Can boards start doing this?
No, it is not law. HB 2886's last action was way back on March 21st, 2025.
March 21st.
Yeah, when it was re-referred to the House Rules Committee.
Okay, re-referred to the House Rules Committee. What does that actually mean for the bill's chances? For an engaged citizen, is that like a good sign, or is it basically a legislative holding tank?
That's a great question, and it's important to understand the legislative process. You know, when a bill like HB 2886 gets referred to the House Rules Committee, it's often a signal that it's hit a roadblock. Think of it exactly like that, a legislative holding tank.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily dead forever. It could theoretically be brought back out, but it means it won't move forward without a significant push or maybe a change in priorities.
So not likely anytime soon.
Probably not. For you, the engaged citizen, it means this proposed flexibility isn't likely to become law anytime soon without some further action or a renewed legislative effort. So for now, the existing stricter rules we talked about still apply.
That's a crucial piece of context. Okay, and there's another bill on the table, HB 3165, with an even more specific focus. It targets a particular type of public body, right? What does this one propose?
Right, HB 3165, also introduced in 2025. This one offers a distinct pathway, but for a very particular type of public body. Local school councils, or LSCs.
LSCs.
Yeah, these are organized under Article 34 of the school code, which primarily covers Chicago public schools. So quite specific.
Ah, okay, so very specific indeed. Not a blanket change for everyone. What's the specific change it proposes just for these LSCs?
The specific change is that this bill would add an OMA provision allowing these specific LSCs to conduct open or closed meetings by audio or video conference without a physical quorum, and entirely outside the public health disaster pathway.
Whoa. Wait, that sounds like a significant shift. So they wouldn't need a disaster declaration and they wouldn't need a physical quorum present.
Correct.
That seems like a game changer for LSCs.
Exactly. This is a major distinction from both current law and the other proposed bill, HB 2886. It creates a potential third distinct pathway just for these specific LSCs to operate fully remotely. The insight here is that the legislature might be recognizing unique needs for certain bodies, perhaps due to the nature of their volunteer members or maybe the sheer volume of meetings they have.
Okay, while that sounds like a great move for LSCs to gain flexibility, couldn't a complete removal of the physical quorum requirement, even with safeguards, potentially erode local engagement? You know, for citizens who prefer in-person interaction?
That's a very fair and important question.
What are the arguments against such broad remote meeting powers, even for specific bodies?
It's really at the heart of the debate. Critics often argue that while technology offers convenience, true public engagement often thrives in that physical space. You know, where face-to-face interactions happen, where documents might be easily accessible on a table, and where the community can feel a direct presence.
Right, that shared space feeling.
Exactly. Granting full remote meeting powers, even with safeguards, could be seen as setting a precedent that kind of de-emphasizes the importance of the physical public forum.
Okay.
And that could potentially make it harder for some citizens to participate effectively or maybe feel connected to their local governance. It's a valid concern about balancing accessibility with the fundamental spirit of open, community-based meetings.
That really brings into focus that tension between convenience and access. So what safeguards would be in place for these LSCs if HB 3165 were to become law? Are they similar to the disaster provisions?
Yes, it does come with specified safeguards, quite similar to those for disaster meetings, to maintain transparency.
Such as?
These include member verification, ensuring the public has audio access to the meeting, requiring roll call votes, adhering to the 48-hour notice requirements, though there's an emergency exception, and keeping a verbatim record of the meetings.
Verbatim record again.
Yes. And the LSC would also bear the compliance costs. So while it grants significant flexibility, it doesn't do so without these robust requirements for transparency built in.
So this targets a very specific group, LSCs, with unique needs, giving them broader remote meeting capabilities than almost anyone else in the state could get. But what's the status of HB 3165? Has the specialized flexibility become law for LSEs?
No, it is not law either. Like HB 2886, HB 3165's last action was also on March 21st, 2025, when it was re-referred to the House Rules Committee.
Same holding pattern.
Exactly. So for now, this particular proposed flexibility for LSEs remains just a proposal, not yet enacted. It really shows that while legislative ideas for increased flexibility are being put forward, getting them across the finish line is, well, it's a challenge.
Okay, so we've navigated the current pretty stripped landscape and peered into the potential future of remote meetings in Illinois with these two bills. What does this all mean for you, the listener, whether you're a member of a public body or just someone who wants to stay informed about local governance and make your voice heard?
Right. For anyone involved with or observing public bodies, it's really about understanding your current obligations and being prepared for potential changes down the road.
Mm-hmm.
The core aha for public bodies right now is that you can't just wait for new laws. You actually have work to do today under the current rules.
Okay, like what? Action items.
Definitely. First, adopt or update your remote attendance rules. Public bodies must have their own Section 7 remote attendance rules in place.
Must have them.
Yes. They need to exist and conform to OMA before a majority can even consider allowing remote attendance by a member under that first pathway. You should be reviewing how you verify members, handle advance notice, record votes, making sure they meet current OMA requirements.
So if you don't have those rules,
then that limited safety valve for individual remote attendance simply isn't available to you. You can't use it.
Wow, okay. That's a critical point for readiness. What else should public bodies be doing right now?
Second, keep a disaster meeting playbook handy. Even if you don't expect to use the Section 7E, disaster procedure, and hopefully you won't need to, having a checklist ready is just vital.
Makes sense. Be prepared.
Exactly. This playbook should cover your notice procedures, how you'll ensure public audio access, how roll call voting will be managed, the requirement for at least one official on-site, unless it's truly impossible, and of course, how you'll maintain that verbatim audio or video recording.
Right.
When a crisis hits, you don't want to be scrambling to figure out the legal specifics.
Good point. What's the third thing?
And third, monitor legislative changes. While HB 2886 and HB 3165 are currently stalled, this conversation around remote meetings isn't going away.
Seems like.
Yeah. If bills like HB 2886 do advance someday, public bodies should be ready to revise their own rules to recognize additional remote attendance reasons appropriate for their specific body, while always, always preserving transparency and public participation. Staying informed is the best way to be proactive.
Those are very clear action items for public bodies. Now, just to help cut through any lingering confusion, let's quickly address a couple of common questions that seem to pop up a lot.
Sure.
These distinctions are really vital for ensuring both operational flexibility and public transparency.
Absolutely. The devil is definitely in the details here.
Okay, first up, do we need a physical quorum when just one member attends remotely for, say, an illness?
Under standard Section 7A remote attendance, that's for illness, emergency child care, or employment purposes, the answer is a resounding yes. A physical quorum must be present at the meeting location.
Okay. Clear yes.
The only time you can have a meeting without a physical quorum present at all is if you are operating under that very specific Section 7E disaster procedure.
Mm-hmm.
And that only kicks in during declared public health emergencies.
Got it. Physical quorum is the default, except for disaster declarations. Second common question, do we have to record the meeting, like audio or video?
Good question. Under standard Section 7A remote attendance, OMA's regular minute-keeping rules apply. You need to keep minutes, but a verbatim audio or video recording isn't generally mandatory by state law.
Okay.
However, under Section 7E disaster meetings, you must keep a verbatim audio-video recording of open meetings in addition to the written minutes. That's a critical extra step for transparency during emergencies.
Verbatim record for disasters, standard minutes otherwise.
Okay.
And finally, the big question everyone wants to know about the proposed changes. Have HB 2886 or HB 3165 become law? Is that flexibility for individual remote attendance or for local school councils now active?
No. Let's be clear on that. As of today, August 29th, 2025, both bills' last action was that re-referral to the House Rules Committee back on March 21st, 2025. They are not law.
Not on the books.
Not on the books. So, for now, the rules we discussed in Section 1, the two pathways, physical quorum needed for individuals, disaster rules for full remote counting, Those are the ones that apply. No new flexibilities are currently enacted.
It's really clear that staying informed on these details is absolutely key for smooth operation and for upholding the spirit of open government. Mm. This deep dive has really shown us the intricate balance, hasn't it, between operational flexibility for public bodies and the fundamental right of public access and transparency.
There really is.
What truly stands out here is the ongoing evolution of how public bodies operate, constantly balancing modern needs with those fundamental principles of open government.
Exactly. The Illinois Open Meetings Act isn't static. It's a living document, constantly being tested and refined by our changing world. Mm-hmm. It's really a reflection of society's evolving relationship with technology and how we define public presence. And this raises, I think, an important question for you, the listener, to maybe ponder.
Oh.
As technology advances and our lives become more remote friendly, how far should we extend the definition of public presence before we start to erode the spirit of truly open, accessible governance for all citizens? Is there a point where convenience for public officials might unintentionally diminish genuine public access?
That's a really great thought to ponder, and it's definitely a question we'll undoubtedly continue to wrestle with as things evolve. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive into Illinois remote public meetings.
My pleasure.
We hope this is giving you the nuggets of knowledge you need to be well informed on this important topic and maybe to better engage with your local community. Until next time.